And do you remember where you first lived?
In the city.
In Manhattan?
I was born here.
Oh, right.
Pretty much. I lived in Staten Island until I was 3. We moved to Manhattan.
Cool. And do you remember your first impression of Manhattan when you got here?
It just seemed
huge.
Familiar. It's sort of familiar. It was home.
Automatically.
I was only 3.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you were a little girl, you played in the parks in Manhattan.
Yeah.
And did you go to shows with your family?
I went to the movies with my mother and grandmother quite a bit. And they didn't like me to go very much because they felt like children should only go to happy things. Because the movies always had drastic things going on.
Yeah.
But, and sometimes I would get very scared, I remember. Those days, first run movies were on Broadway. My mother and my grandmother would take me, and sometimes it was a habit of, just being the tail end of the Depression, there'd be ladies begging outside. It was always very cold. They'd be wrapped up in scarves and gloves and things, and begging, and I would always feel very bad. And I would have snuck my little bag of money that I was supposed to save for Sunday school. I would sneak it in my pocket and try and give them nickels and dimes, and my mother and grandmother would get very angry that I would get upset. They didn't understand. They would feel good to be able to give these ladies some money.
Was it scary being around so many homeless people, and like, did you feel the despair of the city?
No, I didn't, as a matter of fact. As soon as I could, I began to work with homeless people. When I was a member, I became a member of 15th Street Quaker Meeting.
Oh, that's awesome.
And we decided to start a shelter there.
When was that?
This is the height of starting a shelter, kind of a homeless crisis.
Yeah.
It was years and years ago. Which is when everyone started the church-run shelter situation was set up by the city, rather ineptly, so all the churches to really take control of what was allotted to us.
What attracted you to the Quaker community? Was it just that they were being helpful at the time?
No, it was their pacifism.
Yeah.
I remember when the anti-war movement started. This was terrible because at that time I was married and my husband was just the age to be drafted. That was very, very scary.
Was he drafted?
No.
Wow.
Thank God he was not.
They just avoided his birthday? And just didn't get called? Wow.
Yeah.
Did you take part in the anti-war movement?
I did.
Did you go to the protests?
Yeah, the first one was at the UN. It was on a Saturday, and my husband was at work. Most of my friends were going, and I said, that time I'm so focused on Barry not being drafted, nothing else mattered. And so I stayed home, and I felt so restless that day, I just couldn't relax, and finally I just got up and went out, and went to the march. I felt so much better.
Did you go to more after that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds really scary. Did you know a lot of people that were just drafted out of, like, did your friends' husbands just go fight?
No, because if you were in college or joined the National Guard, etc., you could get out of it. Very elderly, you could go to the National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
My father had been part of the 7th Regiment, squeaked him in, so we were spared Vietnam, etc. That was pretty scary.
At that time, there was a lot of different social justice movements that were kind of getting very big in the village. The civil rights movement was kind of at the same time as the anti-war movement, right? Did you go to those? Were you part of that
really.
Too? No? Also, before that, I don't know a lot about how the Red Scare affected this neighborhood. Did you?
I don't know about this neighborhood, but
Where were you?
In Midtown.
Midtown.
Midtown 66th Street.
So, were you there when you were married on 66th
mm-hmm.
Street?
My husband was not too enthusiastic about social justice movement either.
Was not
no.
involved? Yeah. I feel like it must have been difficult. You have to have been in a very difficult circumstance to really get yourself out there to a march, like the fear that you just described. Leading you to the anti-war protest, that seems about right. I don't know if I would have gone if I didn't feel like someone close to me was going to be affected. So after the draft scare kind of went away, things after the Vietnam War ended, did you come downtown? Was that around the time that you moved?
We always wanted to be downtown. And we spent a great deal of our time downtown. But we lived in Midtown.
What did you do when you came downtown?
Went to the theater. Things like that.
Did you go to art shows and
Yeah.
Yeah. My grandmother talks a lot about all the galleries that she went to in the 60s and 70s down here.
Yeah,
she says
great.
They're really, really beautiful. And just that everyone had a different look than they did. She also lived uptown, on the Upper West Side, though. And she just loved to see, like, the glamour of the village. Did you pick up on that, too?
Absolutely.
That style?
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe it?
It was, I guess, sort of hippie-ish in this way.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I started more when I was in boarding school. To Farmington, I would come down. We were allowed to come leave school on a Saturday, so we'd come down with friends. We'd go to certain places on 8th Street, was a big street.
Yeah.
Go and sit and have cappuccinos and so forth. I finally met through a cousin of mine, some older guys who had records to it, which was very, very amazing.
That's pretty cool that you knew the owners of a record store. I'm sure that was fun for you and your friends. So when you were at boarding school, and you come to the city, would you just most look forward to going around to shops, or would it be parks or shows? Like, what did you most enjoy doing with your friends?
Go to places on 8th Street to some of the galleries.
Galleries on 8th Street.
Yeah, maybe. It was sort of on 8th Street on the cafeteria, going to galleries. We're going to movies. More Bergman and so forth.
That's really nice. How did you meet your husband?
Just through, I went to Parsons, had a friend at Parsons, and they had both been young men in Southern California for very happy families and ran away from home together and came to New York. Lived just 2 blocks from here.
What were you studying at Parsons?
Interior design.
I have a lot of friends that are going to Parsons now. They're very excited. It's really nice. It's a nice school still. What's the biggest change that you've seen in this neighborhood since you've lived here?
Actually, there's so much I just focus on what seems good to me. And I always just yearn to be in the village. And I was born on the day 4 hours of body was elected mayor for the second term. It was very exciting to meet my father. Unusually for him, was a great supporter of LaGuardia because he was with him. Honest. The town we lived on, corner of Madison Avenue and 79th Street, right near the Metropolitan Museum, where I visited often as a child, every week with my mother. But I also remember that when Mayor LaGuardia would come visit the museum, when the little entrances now completely disappeared under the Egyptian hoo-ha. Really big.
Oh yeah, of course.
And he used to go up this little set of stairs and I was looking at this mock little mayor. He's so short.
I walk by the statue on LaGuardia Place all the time and I just laugh. Because he's like the shortest little.
I know.
It's so cute.
And I moved down here and I just catch it there when I really come home.
So you really felt a connection to him and you are so close to that statue. This is like
mm-hmm.
5 blocks away.
Mm-hmm.
What other signifiers of the village made you feel like it was the place for you to be?
All the old Italian people in this neighborhood. Still had some rough edges when I got down here.
Oh, I'm sure.
But now I just seek out the old guys. Most of them are gone now. Tony Depp, Leo, who was, we used to call him the mayor of Greenwich Village because he not. Jane, what's her face? He was the one that stopped the pushing of Fifth Avenue through the park.
Oh.
Really, Tony who?
Tony.
He was a wonderful guy. Where I just, when I first saw his little store, which says still exists, right here. And it's called Vesuvio. Started by his parents or his grandparents, I don't remember which. And it was a bakery, and I just thought, thinking about this guy, I have to get to know him. So I did. And when my grandson was born, I just started dancing right in there so he could meet Tony.
Did you just hang out at the bakery to get to know him?
Mm-hmm.
And it was that easy? You could just...
Yeah, he was so friendly. He had a slightly lecherous tone to him, which really easy for young ladies to get to know him.
Yeah.
But he was very sweet, and he'd really advise you about how to do things. Like, remember there was a cop, and I used to walk by the river a great deal, and one time I started noticing people parking on the river. It was the beginning of drug use and stuff. And I was walking there, and this car just swept right in. I looked, and there was this older man. He was snorting something up his nose. He just missed me by about 2 inches. I was really scared. He looked, I guess the mayor of some place had just been arrested. And this man just looked exactly like this old, frantic, middle-aged white guy just snorting stuff up his nose in his car. It was very scary. So I walked back into the neighborhood, saw a cop car pulled up, and I said, you know, this just happened to me. You guys need to keep an eye in there. And they said, oh, no, no. He said, people just go and do their thing there, and then they won't come in this neighborhood. So why don't you just stay here? And he circled his finger around the little circle and said, just walk around the neighborhood, okay? I was furious. So I went into Tony, and I said, what should I do? He said, call.
Did you?
Yeah.
And what did the captain say?
He said, I'll see to it.
So if you walked towards the Hudson River, like, was there a distinct line that you crossed where it was outside of the safety of the village and into the moor?
You didn't cross the West Side Highway, which wasn't built up or developed yet.
Yeah.
At all. There's nothing but parking and trams prancing up and down at night.
Do you remember when that area started to get cleaned up, like for real?
Yeah. When they started Battery Park City, they started also developing along the river. I sort of missed the way it was, though.
Yeah. That's something that I've come across in all when I'm reading about the history of this neighborhood. There's all these eccentric people and brilliant stories of parties and very open social scenes, but also a lot of danger with drugs and crime. And when that stuff gets to becomes cleaned up, then kind of the friendliness and the old attitude of the village started to disappear as well. So it's hard for me to wrap my head around whether it was good or bad that this neighborhood and the neighborhoods around it got so clean. I don't know if we lost more than we gained, if that makes sense.
No, it doesn't.
Do you think we've gained more than we've lost, or?
I miss the old village people.
What do you miss them for?
Their friendliness and reality. There's still one guy who goes, I see him when I go to vote at church, and he's a very nice looking Irish guy, which means he's really old.
Yeah.
He's an Irish guy, and he came to me once and said, you are one tough cookie, said, I watch you manage to get in here all by yourself and vote every time. And I joined the community board, which has its drawbacks.
What drawbacks?
Just tediousness and
arguments,
infighting and stuff. But still, it was interesting.
How long were you on the board?
You had 10 years.
Did you get anything done, do you feel? No.
Not really. You were pretty much set in the way there.
How do you think there's a way to kind of go backwards, if that makes sense, to bring back that open, fluid, friendliness that the village once had? Do you think it's possible now, or is that gone?
I don't know. Just look at all these people milling up and down the street now.
So many tourists also.
Kind of all the old village people, the sort of second wave of artsiness, like Alex Cates and his wife and listen, Charles the Dancer.
Lucinda Childs. I don't. The second wave, is that like the 70s and 80s?
Yeah.
And the second wave brought more money to the village? Yeah, that's.
Not that much more than. Who lived here then have had more money, lived more comfortably, and made it sort of a more comfortable place for other people to come and live too.
Which kind of took away the grittiness.
Yeah.
Do you have any stories of when that grittiness was not a positive thing? Do you remember? I mean, the story of you almost getting hit by a car, that's definitely an example of how the village can be more evil. But was there a time where you felt like things had to become cleaner?
No. Shopkeepers that came in. The first wave of shops were sort of fun and different. They got pushed away.
What were they? Can you tell me about a few that are gone?
Let's see, there was one on the corner of West Broadway. It sold socks. I just loved their socks and went there. And when it lived downtown, wore those socks. They started dealing drugs and got hit by a car and died.
Not to change the topic too much, but did you go to music shows, like concerts, or just were there any street musicians that you felt a particular attachment to?
Not musicians playing on the streets so much, but I went to. There's so many performances in people's loft and stuff, which was great.
That sounds really fun. I wish there was that kind of stuff.
I know, everybody just sat there on the stairs of the building until the doors, and we trailed in and sat down.
And these were just in people's apartments?
In their lofts. There were people like Lucinda Child. And all the wonderful dancers.
And these parties and shows, were they open to everyone or just circles of friends?
I guess. No, I mean, if you knew about them, you'd go.
And you knew. When you were a teenager, were you at boarding school still?
No.
Did you go to those kinds of shows?
No.
That was when you were an adult.
Yeah.
When you were a teenager on 8th Street, drinking cappuccinos, at night, did you go out? Was there like a more teenage scene that you took a part of? Or was it just kind of daytime activities?
Maybe more sort of daytime activities.
Yeah. So it was only when you became an adult that you started going to concerts. Was that your favorite few blocks, 8th Street, would you say?
Yeah, definitely. The movie theaters and the art galleries, the coffee places. There's a lot. 8th Street was it.
Can you tell me about any more shops that you really adored?
There was a place on there's two blocks down from here called Knob Kerry, which had ethnic clothes of every description.
Knob Kerry. And at these places, would you know the owners? Would you talk to shopkeepers easily?
Yeah.
It feels awkward now. There's a different kind of boundary between the customer and the owner, I feel.
Definitely, the customer is down here. If they're a little more on home again.
Yeah. There's a distrust. I always feel like shop owners think I'm going to take something when I try to talk to them.
People used to be so loose. That's why they have their clothes, they open their door open and have some nice little display. And you see some kids come along and reach in and grab their boots and run. So it's brought to an end.
Yeah.
It's own friendliness. And
I can't think of the reform as such a bad thing because people have to make money and keep their merchandise safe. But I really envy the time where you could just have a comfortable conversation with a shop owner and not feel like they suspected you of something or that there was any distrust. And I feel like that extended to parks too. You could just talk to people and not. Am I over romanticizing the time period?
Well, it was always a time. Washington Square Park had its dangers always.
Tell me about Washington Square Park. I love Washington Square Park.
I like it again now. It's really kind of horrible phase.
What kind of horrible?
I guess partly because I was working with homeless people at the time and I always walked through the park on my way to work. I had many unpleasant things happen. Like, I remember the scariest was one time. I also went to dance class on 8th Street. I studied with one of the last of the lonely with black hair and a bun. I remember her studio every day for dance class. And one time I was walking over, it was very hot. I remember I just had on my leotard and tights and a white shirt and some white pants. Shoes that all dancers were wearing that year. And I was heading diagonally from here over to the corner, the northeast corner of the park. And suddenly this great horde of drug-using queens and nasty boys swept in the park and surrounded me in a circle. She's wearing a kung fu shoe. She thinks she's cool. They were poking and prodding at me. And I was really upset and angry. And I just pushed my way through and hit them from the rear end on my way through. And of course, the ones that got hit on the rear end were laughing. Oh, did a girl beat you up, did you? So they had more trouble between themselves. drug issue.
And that was day and night.
Yeah, I got to. He said, can I would walk home from Pickering? You know, that I would just have to just put my towel in the park. I'd be surrounded by five homeless people who were going to escort me home and stuff, which was very nice.
So nice.
But then when you've been mugged a few times, then you start really feeling very angry. And you all my friends have that experience. You all feel very angry. Like on the subway, there were too many kids that look like me on the subway.
So would you avoid the subway?
No, I would take it, but sit there feeling very angry. And finally I thought, I guess I came on a weekend at the Quaker Meeting House. And I had a friend who, always used to open the meeting house on holidays and Christmas and so forth. We could have AA meetings and shelter, whatever else people were used to there. But the staff would have the day off. So this one weekend, I remember it was Labor Day in Johnson. He said, yeah, could I open up the phone? I said, yes. And so the weekend before that, I went to my own meeting for adult children with alcoholics in the meeting house, and I said, well, I have to open up next weekend. Anyone who can meet me here? Because in those days we had kind of an alarm system where you have to, it was very tedious, and I never did it very well. And you rang a bell and this and that, and like doors would open. And I did it wrong as usual, and I had asked one meeting the week before anyone would come and meet me here. So I was down the steps all along. After I called, we were unlock the meeting house. Those were the days when it wasn't done all we had to stand there and wait. Someone to come, it seemed very vulnerable. Because I guess they had done a thing of cleaning out the park, Union Square. And everyone they cleaned out ended up in the meeting house. So I was standing there, and my friend came. And I set off all my alarms in the building. So she went to go and call the TV back and tell them to come. But I was standing there and this guy came up and recognized me. He went to AA meetings in the building and he started chatting with me. He said, what do you have there? I said, I have three birthday cakes and one's birthday day. And I remember he just, sort of calculating look flashed over his face like, oh, she's a real sap, right? And so then he put his hand in. He said, you know, I've just come up from Washington, D.C. I bought a gun. And right here is a .45. And he just sort of put his hand in his pocket. And it's a .40. I think it's a .45. And I thought, that's the meaning of a .45. Later, somebody told me it makes a bigger hole. And so it was intended to scare me. I was already scared to death. And, give me your money. I said, okay. I did, and I felt very grateful because I had been held up under other circumstances where people grab you and touch you, which is very scary. I thought, he didn't touch me, all he did was put his pants pocket and say, I've got a .45 here. But, so it wasn't that bad. And everyone showed up, and of course it was a great hoo-ha from everyone.
Yeah.
Because half the guys at the AA meeting, the guys who often also came to our shelter, so they wanted to rush off and go and find this guy, beat him up and protect me, and I said, no.
Aww.
And so on and so forth. And there was one guy who came to our COA meetings, his name was Willie. kicked off at that look of being very tough and scary. He was very fashion forward when other people didn't do that. He had a shaved head and he wore dark glasses and he was black, sort of scary looking. And halfway through the meeting, he just put his head on the table and started to cry. And he said, "Look at this mess now. The guys in the AA meeting are running around looking to catch this guy. No one knew who it was who'd done it. And they're going to get hurt and so forth." And I said, he said, "I could have headed this off when Betty asked for help last week. I knew that I should have been to help. My feelings about women and white people are so fucked up that I didn't do it. Now look at the mess there is." And I thought, and another friend of mine from COA called me 2 weekends later and asked me to come over to her house. She had been mugged. She worked at night. She had been mugged in the station on the corner of Central Park West, a big station that's sort of deserted. She'd come off work at about 7 in the morning and some black guy hit her in the face. And mugged her and ran off, and she was in her house. She asked me if I would come over. She was so scared. I went over and she'd asked me to get cat food and stuff for her cat. I sort of sniffed the air and I said, "Do you want me to get some litter?" And she said, "No, it's me. That's my sweat. I'm so scared." That was like a real dark period in New York. All over the place.
Did you practice any methods of self-defense? No? You just trusted that you'd find your way out of those kinds of situations? One way or the other? Wow.
Oh, then you get a weapon.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like I would have the kung fu and stuff like that.
Well, you had the kung fu shoes. You could have.
Well, but I didn't have anything else.
Yeah. Working in the homeless shelter must have been really, really interesting then.
I loved it.
How long did you do that?
I ran it for about 4 years.
You ran it? And did you start it, or just did you help start it?
I helped start it, and then I ran it. I think Jim John Lisa opened the meeting house with. And then there were 2 guys who used to volunteer there who were very high-end AA. In other words, they had stopped drinking before they fell apart.
Mm.
And they came to me one day. They were on the whatever committee of the meeting that handled money. They said, "We found out in a certain program that HRA is doing for housing for homeless people. And we know that we have the money to do it in the meeting. You're the only person we know is non-flaky enough to do it, and the meeting will support it if it's you."
And
so we did. We opened up a residence.
Wow. Why were you only there for 4 years?
Well, because the idea came starting this.
The what was starting?
A residence for homeless people.
Oh, yeah.
With AIDS.
So there wasn't much need for what you had begun?
No, we still have the shelter. Green Street is open every night of the year.
What, did, what was your, what was part of your job? Like, did you just organize the facilities for the homeless people that would stay there, or did you, meet with them and, like, what were some of your responsibilities?
You trained the workers, the volunteers.
Who mostly volunteered?
Obviously, a fair amount of people from the Quaker meeting. Huge amount of gay guys. Yes, because I had a lot of gay friends. When I began, AIDS came along.
And they disappeared?
No. I mean, some of them did, of course. I became very involved in those issues.
How?
So I said, I realized that people were going to need places to live. And I said, no, when my two business rent apartments, I said, I'll do it if we can house formerly homeless people with AIDS there. They said, okay. That took me a long time to get. We had a committee to do the work. That's so crazy. They didn't want AIDS here, they didn't want this, they didn't want that. I said, you all are really having mental problems. I said, call me when you're ready to come to grips with reality. I'll be there. So they twiddled around for about 2 years and came back, and that time there was a good piece of property available. So we just got it and opened it up.
Where was it?
It took us years. On the corner, where the armory is, if the, as in the armory show.
In
Lexington Avenue.
Oh, right, yeah. So you housed homeless with AIDS?